We're back now on KID's Morning News, and we're pleased to have joining us this morning. You probably know him best as Dr. Sky if you listen to Coast to Coast. Steve Cates, welcome. Great to have you with us this morning.
Well, thank you, Neil. A privilege and honor, and one of the affiliates. You are one of them there, and hey, thanks again for having me, talking about this wonderful eclipse that we're so excited about.
Days away, and you say this will be your fifth eclipse, is that right?
This will be the fifth total solar eclipse. I guess I got eclipse fever, Neil, here. It's just amazing, you know, traveling around the country and some parts of the world. But more important than anything else, for the people who've never seen one, obviously, as long as the weather holds out about a week from now, literally, this is going to be so smashing successful, it's just going to knock the socks off most people. And you'll catch eclipse fever, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I was actually 6 years old in 1979 when that one came through the Panhandle, and I happened to be living in the Panhandle. My dad was finishing school up there at the time, and so I actually experienced that eclipse, but the memories are fuzzy, more of a snapshot than an actual, you know, moving memory in my mind. But I'm excited to have the second one and to look through the eyes of an adult. But let's talk about your plan, because you've chosen East Idaho. You're in Arizona. So come up I-15, Idaho typically is a great place to view clear skies in late August, and so you've chosen this as your destination.
Absolutely, and looking at the entire eclipse map across the 14 states, technically, that totality touches down, you know better, of course, this is your hometown and your home area and your home state. This area, obviously, this time of year, probably has the best weather, including that of the, you know, the desert areas of the state of Oregon. But we've been planning this for quite a while and trying to keep some of this eclipse trip a little secret because, you know, in the broadcast world, we tend to talk a lot and then obviously giving it away. But everybody here in Phoenix and across the nation knows that I'm heading up into the Rexburg, Idaho Falls area. And, of course, we're not going to tell them the exact location because we'll probably, Neil, be bumper to bumper or elbow to elbow.
Yeah.
So many other revelers that want to watch this.
Well, we certainly have tentative plans to have you swing by our studio. We're right off the highway. It's not hard. So that may be, I mean, I'm very much looking forward to that if you can swing it. But you're right. There are a lot of people, they've got, most people's plans are tentative because they don't know all the things that can happen with traffic issues. And I want to ask you about that a little bit later,
sure.
But I'm intrigued by what you call the dynamics of what happens during an eclipse. So maybe paint a picture for us. What happens with the people and even the animals and what's going on in people's space when that eclipse comes overhead?
Neil, this is an amazing moment here. And those that are going to experience totality, once they leave here, they literally will be hooked. To me, this is a spiritual event, an emotional event, and I describe it as sacred geometry. And here's the definition there. Where else in the solar system, as an astronomer, I teach this in my own programs in schools and colleges, and as a broadcaster like yourself, where else in the solar system do we have this amazing sacred geometry when an object, the moon, some 2,159 miles in diameter, ever so close to the Earth as we know, and an object called the sun, 865,000 miles in diameter, 93-ish billion miles away, have the opportunity on occasion to literally cover each other with this precision of geometry. I call it the sacred geometry. Yeah. It's something that's very, very rare. And indeed, as you've probably been describing, rightfully so, you must be within that 60 or 70-mile path to see the totality. If you're just on the outside of that, you would get a 99.9% eclipse. And maybe if you stepped over into the neighbor's yard where the outer line is, you'd see a second or two of totality. But, Neil, the part of the question that you asked me, I think, is the most enjoyable because this is the spiritual side. Many eclipse watchers know this. There's something unearthly about seeing totality. But at the moment it happens, let's say we have clear skies. We had partly cloudy skies in Hawaii back in July of 1991, but I'll describe it there. Through the partly cloudy skies, the temperature dropped during totality within at least 10 degrees, if not more. Animals, horses, sheep, cows, cattle, whatever, cats, dogs, they sense something that we humans may not sense. And what happens to most animals is that they're going to seek shelter thinking it's nighttime, and nighttime indeed is what's going to happen. Ants are known to go back into the ground. Birds will stop flying. And if all is well, no matter how many people are there, let's hope our other eclipse guests are specially inclined to give us that moment of peace, like a religious moment. But this, really, Neil, you hear nothing. You suck in, as I say, breathe in this beauty, because you'll see the jet black moon cover this amazing star, the sun. Around the rim, you'll see, if there's solar activity, these red and orange prominences, and then this silvery glow, like an ethereal glow of the corona. Wow, I think we're getting in the right mood, don't you think?
Absolutely. And, you know, we had a show, obviously we've been covering this quite a bit, and we had a gentleman call in who was an eclipse chaser, and he said sometimes human behavior goes a little goofy. People will walk for 500 feet, and when the eclipse is over, they didn't realize they were doing it. Is there, you know, trance-like behavior? What is there anything?
Absolutely, yeah. Yes. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. I can't attest to myself doing that, but what you just described is certainly within reason, because it is that special. And here's also the issue, too, whether we're super pro-science and we're very technical, and believe me, we have a lot of those coming on our Dr. Sky trip up to your area, the beautiful area of Southeastern Idaho, but I don't want to make this too mechanical. And I tell people, if you're coming up there to just take pictures, well, that's your choice. But I think towards totality, you should at least hopefully try. And I get laughed at a little, Neil, because some people say, you think I'm going to miss 2 minutes and 17 seconds, or I'm going to miss 1 minute and 49 seconds, which is what Idaho Falls will get. They're going to be on those cameras all the time. But, Neil, this is something interesting. When and how this event takes place, if you look with the naked eye, and only time to take those solar glasses off, I'm sure you've been repeating this warning and having people know this, and obviously you're doing a great job.
Yeah.
You need to have the solar glasses on all the time, as it goes 99.9%. Then and only then can you take off the glasses. But what I'm saying is it should be a fun event, because there's some other little subliminal things that happen around an eclipse. So if you're with other people, folks, without tasking every family member that, you know, they'll regret talking to you later if you seemingly put them to work. But here's some project that I would recommend people doing, and you may find this very different than what you've heard about before. All you need to do is take a simple bed sheet, fold it in half, the white of the bed sheet, put four little rocks or something to hold it so it doesn't blow away. There's a phenomenon, Neil, called shadow bands. And I don't know how many people have been talking about this, because this is something as an extra treat for eclipse watchers.
Mm-hmm.
What are shadow bands? Scientists are really not totally convinced, but they think, and that's even scientists, I use the word and underline it with my highlighter, they think that it's due to the rapid change of temperature in the Earth's atmosphere and this eerie light that's still coming around the edges of the sun before totality. What do you see on the ground, Neil? Is these undulating waves, as if you're looking at, you see pools and you look into the water and you see these weird shadows just flipping around. It'd be interesting to have people capture these. They have with their video cameras, and maybe everybody, since they have an Android or an iPhone. This is something very cool. So if I were having, let's say, two or three people at my eclipse site, whoever's going to shoot pictures, they're free to do what they want. But maybe make sure you maybe have somebody concentrating on the shadow bands, and they'll crawl up the walls of any white surface. And here's a bizarre one, but it's actually kind of fun if you have children at this. With your back to the sun, now you may have never heard this before, if you take a simple saltine cracker out and hold it in your hand, and let's say you have a small table and you have shade there and the sun is behind you, during the partial phases, as it gets up to like 50 or 60%, hold that little saltine cracker with your back to the sun onto another sheet of paper, about maybe a foot away.
Mm-hmm.
Neil, you're going to see little images through the saltine cracker holes, and I never knew how many holes a saltine cracker has, but you're going to see that many eclipses, just like you will with many trees that will project the images through the leaves and the porosity of the leaves. That is really cool for the young at heart, too.
We're talking with Dr. Sky. You hear him on Coast to Coast with a weekly update there, and he's coming up for the eclipse. Super excited about it. What are your plans to accomplish? I mean, up here, you're very much a science guy, so you come up here, and it's more than just a tourism venture for you. That you actually want to, you know, accomplish something here.
Neil, we've got many plans, but this is going to sound maybe refreshing to the listeners. We live in this most obstreperous heat down here in Phoenix, and I'm following your weather. And all of our crew, which consists of about four or five people, they cannot wait to have a jacket on at 2 o'clock in the morning or a light sweater. And I'm enjoying your weather and hopefully the clear skies that we're all here hoping and praying happen.
Yeah.
But seriously, on the science side, We have a photo team. We'll be shooting a small documentary for our own purposes, whether it's 1080p or 4K. I haven't talked to the people that do it. We do this on a regular basis, but we want to capture this in our time there. We want to say hi to the many folks up there that are obviously there and partaking in the eclipse from all over the world, make new friends. We want to make sure that we have a chance to shoot and photograph it with our telescope equipment. My brother's a professional photographer in the aviation world. One of our sites is photorecon.net for military and space and aviation. He's bringing his camera gear to capture that. I'm going to be doing stuff through the telescope. But, Neil, in the human sense, I just want to spend time, like I said before, to breathe in this event, share with people this experience, and document that so that one day we can come back home here to Phoenix, and others go back home, and we can all look and say, you know what? We want to get ready. We got the fever. We got the itch. The next major total solar eclipse here in the United States. Mark the date down, folks. April the 8th, 2024. It's not called the Great American Total Solar Eclipse again. And by the way, this eclipse, though the namesake says Great American Total Solar Eclipse, it is absolutely spot on, Neil, because the shadow cone starts off way out in the Pacific. Mm-hmm. It doesn't touch land for the whole diameter of the United States. That's a long time. Hits the coast of Oregon, as you know, and then transits across the United States in 93 minutes at over 1,800 miles an hour. That's how fast the shadow's going. It leaves the coast of Charleston, South Carolina. But April 8, 2024, the eclipse path, which will be much longer than this one, literally goes to the outer edge of Dallas, Texas. And we're preparing already, and this is not a joke, we say this with total respect. We all know what happened in Dealey Plaza back in 1963. But could you imagine flying in, because airlines, let's say like Southwest, you could fly into Love Field, get a reservation at a hotel, walk downtown to Dealey Plaza or be somewhere in those cavernous areas or the big buildings. You get about a four-minute total eclipse. But, Neil, for the rest of Texas, like Waco and areas like that, in the Texas Hill Country, there's probably tons of good places to watch as the eclipse path moves across Oklahoma, Missouri, goes along the coast of Cleveland, Ohio, downtown Buffalo, New York, up to New York State and into Canada. Well, you know we got eclipse fever, but I can't wait to see this one, just like you and the rest of the folks there on your station and in Idaho.
Prep us. We're talking with Dr. Sky. Prep us, I guess, from just a logistical standpoint. You've seen five of these. Traffic problems, public safety issues. What have you observed as you've traveled to the various eclipses?
You know, great question, Neil. I have never really seen any confusion in the past, and that's why this one gives me great concern, because there's some folks out with the GreatAmericanEclipse.com that have put together and other good websites. They talk about these things. We all know what watersheds are, where water meets and they all confluence into oceans or big lakes. In the astronomy world, for the eclipse, we call these drive sheds. And I couldn't believe what I was reading on there. There's probably like a 20-page document that talks about the awareness of potentiality for big traffic jams and other issues. But here's the point. The number one drive shed for this eclipse is along the East Coast, where Charleston, South Carolina is. They estimate through statistics, and I believe them, that there's 95 million people that have access to Interstate 95 and all that area on the East Coast. That tells you that place is going to be jammed and overloaded.
Mm-hmm.
Of all the other places, get a load of this. Your area, Idaho Falls and southeastern Idaho, is actually the number two drive shed in the nation for potential. Not that that many people are going to show up. It's just the Interstate 15, yep. And you know your geography better than I do. They meet in that area.
Right.
35 million people have the potential. But I've never seen the eclipse I can talk about that was kind of like what we think we don't want to happen was in Hawaii. And being that it's an island state, everybody knows you had to be, we flew into Honolulu. We then took another airplane the next day over to the Big Island and stayed in the Kona area. And I decided to stay in my hotel. And what I'm about to tell you is a little bit humorous to some and to the others. It was just a tragedy in the sense that they never got to see it. Here's what happened. We got into our hotel. Many friends of mine said the next day they're driving up to Mauna Kea, the big telescope at 14,000 feet. And I said, don't do that. And they said, why? And I said, because they're not going to open that area for two reasons. Most people can't handle 14,000 feet. Imagine thousands of people up there, oxygen deprivation. They just locked the road down. So a lot of these people went up to the mountain road. They got stuck in the layer of clouds, which is rain. All I did was open my patio door at my hotel, ordered breakfast, and I sat there and watched it. But we never had any difficulty with traffic jams, other than maybe that minor thing that I reported.
Yep.
So this one is of great concern, Neil, because I guess 25 years ago, it was another generation. So nowadays, everything's internet, everything's digital, and we've had a long time. So there's so many people that want to get in, but you're the expert there, and I'd rather listen to your story about the preparations. I've been following some of it, but let's hope, I mean, I'm sure everyone is doing the very best they can to make sure that people get in and out of there safely and moving along.
Yeah, well, it certainly is not for any lack of planning or forethought if there are major problems. We have a two-lane interstate coming through, we've got a population that would warrant a four-lane interstate coming in for a few days. So it will be interesting. We don't know what we don't know at this point. So
absolutely. We wish the best, and certainly we'll be amongst the many others that are reveling to the eclipse. But I want to mention, we put together something at drsky.com, and I really appreciate letting people know about this. If you go to the main page of my website, or the website for my business, Dr. Sky Inc., you'll see the sun. It's the Great American Total Solar Eclipse. I call it Survival Guide. And it's short and to the point. If you click it, I put together what I think are some of the important links that work for this eclipse. For instance, history of eclipses, how to photograph eclipses, the great eclipses of the past, some of the warnings or things that are being posted across the internet, fact or fiction. And people can actually go to a special Google map that was done by one of the great map makers. You can literally just put your mouse over the path of totality or anywhere in North America, and it will instantly tell you what your condition should be, at least for eclipse-wise. And we're proud to put that out there and let people know that.
Yeah. Again, drsky.com, is that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And I encourage people to go there. There are tons and tons of resources that are out there. I wanted to ask you, circle back to this sacred geometry thing. Is that just a mysterious coincidence that our moon is the same diameter as the sun? Or is there some scientific reason that maybe we're not keying into?
Neil, I've explored this my whole life. I'm 61, and I know many people who specialize in the subjects and study of just solar eclipses and the dynamics. Nowhere in the solar system have we found such an amazing lineup, and that is very special. And again, here's the bad news, and this will put a smile on most of the listeners' face, or at least a chuckle. Every year, Neil, the moon recedes from the Earth about a couple of centimeters, if that. And why do I say that? Because, get a load of this, this is the funny part to me. We will not have total eclipses of the sun 600 million years from now. But most of us don't have to really worry about that. But the point is this. I call it sacred geometry. I didn't coin the term. Better people in this subject than myself. Obviously, I'm kind of like you. I do the reporting, and we go to experts on this, too, on specialties. But the subject here that we're talking about, it's sacred to me because we have nothing else in the solar system. If you look at Mercury, no satellites. Venus, none. Earth, of course, the moon. Mars, two tiny little bitty things, Deimos and Phobos, which are irregular. They look like little chunks of potato that were thrown out by Mars.
Yeah.
Asteroid belt, well, that's another big mess of material. Jupiter, with an amazing array of satellites before Galilean. But obviously, from a perspective where you can see totality like this, with the diameters of the sun and these planetary objects, Saturn, still many, many moons, but nothing like this type of geometry. Uranus and Neptune, and then Pluto, of course, with five moons. And by the way, my professor in college was Dr. Tombaugh, who discovered the then-named planet Pluto. And I'm sure today, if we could speak to Dr. Tombaugh on a personal note, he would be a little bit shocked that his discovery here in Arizona back in February the 18th, 1930, has simply been demoted to being that of a dwarf. But again, Neil, staying on measure, no planetary objects that we know of exhibit this type of precision. And the listeners may be wondering, well, okay, Dr. Sky, if that's the case, then why don't we see a total eclipse of the sun every single month? And that's the greatest of all questions, simply answered this way. The moon and the sun do not literally cross that nodal point exactly every month. So in your mind's eye, the theater of the mind on radio, imagine this. Every month, you see the sun in the sky. The moon, when it goes new, is above, obviously, or below the moon. If you could blot out the sun without the moon, you would notice that it transits. And that's where some of that astronomy software is really cool, because you can see the distance between the sun and the moon, and you go, darn it, I just wish it was a few more degrees. If it's a few more degrees, you get a partial eclipse. If it's that sacred geometry of an exact nodal crossing, you can have a total eclipse of the sun. So there's two shadows. The umbra, which is the deep, dark shadow, is the shadow that you're fortunate enough to be in southeastern Idaho and some other 14 states.
Yeah.
The rest of the shadow, which we see as a partial eclipse, is the outer shadow called the penumbra. But the warning is this. Everybody needs to be wearing those solar glasses no matter where they are. Mm-hmm. Only time you can take them off, obviously, is totality for what? 2 minutes or 1 minute and 49 seconds of totality that I believe is coming to Idaho Falls.
Yeah. Now, we wanted to talk about the glasses because there is an issue with the glasses that we need to be concerned about.
You're right. And let me start off from the very, very beginning in the simplest way. 2 years ago, there was no concern about this. There's a standard that NASA has, and there's an ISO standard that's out there, like 1234-5-12, without getting overly technical. But the point is, 2-3 years ago, when there was no eclipse mania, we got solar glasses. The point of these solar glasses is NASA came up with this, quote, so-called standard. You know, they say a 14 and better in the darkness shading is what you need. But the ISO stamp, here's the problem. I've been doing this with school kids and adults for so long, and I put those on, and I'm fine. But now we're seeing, and I'm not going to name any companies because I have no right to do that. I don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
But there are approved vendors out there that you simply go to the NASA website, and they'll tell you that. But here's the problem recently. I understood, as recent as just a few days ago, that Amazon is going to issue a 100% credit to anybody that believes that their solar glasses are not correct. Now, this is some sort of a subliminal panic that seems to be going on out there. Here's the bottom line from myself. I've observed the sky for a long time. I am not selling any solar glasses on this interview, and our company has been providing those, and we're all out anyway. Yeah. So the reputable ones would probably do this, and I have to say probably. You should not be able to see any light through that in your home. Like if you sit in your dining room or near any super bright light, you should not be able to see the light or the filament of that light. Now, that's not a real scientific answer, is it? But when you go out and look at the sun, there should be a shading on that that makes the sun absolutely comfortable. It'll look just like the size of a full moon, but orange, or depending on the material, it could be another color. So I purchased, just to be kind of like a test of this, I did this about 3 weeks ago. I went on to Amazon, searched through the vendors, and I wanted the coolest pair of what looked like motorcycle goggles that said and claimed they were ISO certified. Well, lo and behold, I ordered two, and I had my doubts. I just wanted to prove this to the audience that the glasses we do have, that are these little paper glasses that NASA has listed on their site as being okay, are indeed okay. I took those out. I looked in my living room first into the dining room light, and I could see the filaments in every bulb inside my chandelier. Mm. And I said, this can't be good. So I quickly turned them up toward the sun, holding them away from my eyes. And lo and behold, I see this green, bright object. I'm not using those, and I'm sending those back, of course.
Yeah. So just, I mean, how do we know it's reputable then? Because honestly, our station, our group of stations, we ordered thousands of these. We've been giving them out. And I was doing, while you were talking, I'm looking, and we have a lamp in our studio. I don't see any filament at all. The only thing I've ever seen is the sun. So I think we're good.
Yes, but I want to say this, and I know you'll get a chuckle out of this, or at least I think somebody will. I'm not giving a Dr. Sky standard on here. There's a much more higher level authority than myself. So I'm saying if you can't, in that basic demo, I would say you have the proper solar glasses. But in conclusion, Neil, there's so much confusion out there. This is what I'm hoping after the eclipse, and I want to be part of this. And nobody's invited me to the party, but I want to do this. I'd like to get together with some of the other people that are reputable companies here and really start going out. And hopefully all these companies will get together and have some sort of a way to officially, whether they hologram these, because here's the point. They're only a dollar or two per piece of for a glass.
Yeah.
Maybe, unfortunately, due to potential fraudulent activity, maybe we'll have to put a special hologram or so, you know, like the NFL has. Or, you know, anybody like that in the sports world knows they supposedly have fake from real sports memorabilia or sports gear. I don't know. But I'm trying to err on the side of caution. And I think you would agree that maybe we need to do something that has some sort of a better standard. So the next eclipse, when we're all in Dallas, or wherever we are, this will be a moot topic by then. And at least we save people from losing their eyesight.
Well, agreed. And Dr. Sky has been our guest. We will be talking with you in the coming days, Dr. Sky. Hopefully, maybe, I don't want to promise this, but we would love for you to have an in-studio visit when you come up here over the eclipse weekend in advance of the actual eclipse on Monday. So we appreciate the time that you've spent, the expertise, and the great way you tell the story. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Neil. I'm privileged and honored to be on your station. I appreciate all you're doing at KID News Radio in the southeast area of Idaho and other parts of the state. Looking forward to that, and I'll be available for you if you choose to be online as we're driving up there. And hopefully the cell service is not going to collapse, but you know better what those predictions are. But thank you for having me.